Welcome to the weekly Dharma Talk podcast from the Columbus Karmateksum Choling Buddhist Meditation Center. This week's Dharma Talk is entitled The Forgiving Heart by Lama Tom Broadwater. In the abstract, forgiveness makes so much sense. But where the rubber meets the road, forgiveness can be so difficult. In this talk, we will look at examples of forgiveness and employ Dharma practice to reach a life-affirming decision to forgive. If you like our Dharma Talk series, please consider donating to Columbus Karmateksum Choling at columbusktc.org. Enjoy the podcast.
I was thinking last week, and many people have already said it, there's so many people to thank for this building. It's the it's Lama Cathy, it's Kim Miracle, it's the board. Lots of people. And the other people I'm thinking about is like the workers who did this building, the electricians. One time I came in here and there's a group of electricians that were doing all the work, and they were so happy that they were doing something like this, working to build this sacred space. So those are people we can certainly thank in addition. Then there is a fellow by the name of Ronnie Lee Carroll. We can thank him. Ronnie, when the building burnt down, was 19 years old. He's now 25. He was the arsonist that burnt the building. He didn't do it intentionally. He was like going from dumpster to dumpster, and that just sort of happened. But we can thank him. He didn't have the intention to build this place. But as a result of what he did, this building is here today. I remember at the time, around the time when the building burnt down, there was some discussion, what should we do? Should we do this? Should we do that? You know, the building was getting old. And Ronnie made our minds up for us. So we can thank him. I was also thinking last week as I was sitting here and listening to Lama Cathy, I was thinking, How unworthy I am to be even sitting here. I mean, what did I do to help get this place built? I mean, I gave a few dollars. I hoped and prayed that when I walked by or drove by that it would be built. But in fact, I did very little. I made a very little contribution. But I recalled, and it was really fortunate, that last week I recalled a teaching that Kempo Karto Rinpoche gave over 20 years ago. And in it he said, one cannot assume that a minor act of virtue, or non-virtue for that matter, has a small effect. It could have a major effect. In addition, he said, the duration of the action does not correspond to the duration of its effects. He said, one moment of extreme anger can produce a generation of harm. And then he said, by the same token, one moment of sincere devotion to a genuine object of faith can cause you and others to abide in a state of well-being for a very long time. He said, Omani Penme Hung. You think, well, no big deal, right? Big deal. I said, Omani Penme Hung. Maybe I said it as I was driving by, Omani Penme Hung, may this be built. So you think, no big deal. And he said, that's incorrect. It can, that one Omani Penme Hung can do, and I quote, an unbelievable amount of good. Then he said, as he says things very directly, he said, but of course we want to do as much good as we can. And more importantly, we want to avoid doing harm to others, to all of our, you know, to the best of our abilities. Then he said, one spark can burn down a forest. One moment of genuine virtue can burn up a forest of afflictive emotion. So if you drove by and you looked up and you said, I can't wait till this gets done for the benefit of all beings, O mani padme hum, or I gave a dollar to the building of this building, you own this building, it's yours. Some small part of it, because of your virtue, your giving, your doing, has resulted in this beautiful building being built. There may be even some of you that have done none of that because this is your first time here. And if that's the case, if you came with goodwill, if you came with the idea, I want to be a better person, if that was your intention in coming here, the seat you sit on right now, you own today. It's yours. And if you come back next week or next month with that same intention, I want to better myself for the benefit of other beings, when you sit down, you own that seat that you sit in, and you have every right to be sitting in that seat. We're going to do the refuge prayer, and I'll need one if you could give me one. Thanks, Lama Adam. So it's about taking refuge. And I think like 2 weeks ago, we had a refuge ceremony and Lama Kathy talked to us about what we're taking refuge in, and also what we are taking refuge from. And it's with the idea of being awakened, to be fully awakened, to be enlightened. We sometimes think that great saints like Milarepa, who was a saint who lived in the 12th century, that their effort to awaken, you know, that they were sort of superhuman. They didn't feel pain or difficulty in that road to awakening. But again, Kempa Karta Rinpoche said one time that Milarepa, just like you or I in the beginning, when he was sitting in those caves, he was shivering. He was cold. When he didn't eat, he was hungry. And when he didn't sleep, he was tired. So Milarepa, we think of him as way out there, and we couldn't do that. Well, we can't quite imitate him, obviously, but we can use him as an example of what it would be like to be awakened. So, the other thing I would say is, what are we taking refuge from? Kempa Karta Rinpoche once said that samsara, this endless cycle of suffering that you and I are engaged in, he used a rather strong word, and it's a strong word. He said, samsara is a swamp of vomit. Whoa, that sounds pretty strong, doesn't it? He doesn't mean that appearances are bad or not beautiful. What he's saying is that our grasping, our holding on, our wanting whatever it may be, fame, fortune, whatever, good time, when we want all of that, and we want it so much and so often, it makes us sick. So we're taking refuge from this ocean of suffering, which Rinpoche called a swamp of vomit. So let's say the prayer together. Does everyone have one? Okay. So in the Buddha, the Dharma, and the assembly most excellent, I take refuge until I reach enlightenment. By the merit of generosity and other good deeds, may I achieve enlightenment for the sake of all beings. In the Buddha, the Dharma, and the assembly most excellent, I take refuge until I reach enlightenment. By the merit of generosity and other good deeds, may I achieve enlightenment for the sake of all beings. In the Buddha, the Dharma, and the assembly most excellent, I take refuge until I reach enlightenment. By the merit of generosity and other good deeds, may I achieve enlightenment for the sake of all beings. So today's talk is, I've named it the forgiving heart. And sort of in parentheses, the forgiving heart 101. We're going to just briefly touch on it in a way. And the reason I chose this topic is because I think as we form a new community, we need to forgive and be forgiven. As we come together, it is inevitable as human beings, we're going to harm one another, hurt one another. We're going to need to be forgiven. And at the same time, we need to forgive. So that's the first reason I'm talking about the forgiving heart. The second reason is it's a very auspicious time to begin talking about the forgiving heart. It's a new beginning. It's a new chance to drop old resentments. And finally, I think a forgiving heart is a core value of any spiritual community. Without it, at some point, it will collapse under the weight of its accumulated resentments. So a forgiving heart is really a necessary part of this community. So basically what I will do today or try to do today is define what a forgiving heart is. I'm going to give you two striking examples of a forgiving heart. I'll note the barriers we may have to forgiveness. And in light of that, I'm going to try to tell you what I think Rinpoche might want us to do from this point forward. So, what is a forgiving heart? A forgiving heart is a heart that is vast enough to recognize and contain the true dimensions of any perceived injury. And at the same time, able to see the humanity, we might say Buddha nature, of the other individual. So I'm going to say that again. That's a mouthful. A forgiving heart is a heart that is vast enough to recognize and contain the true dimensions of an injury, and at the same time, able to see the humanity of the other person. So let's talk about this. This definition can apply to a person seeking forgiveness and the person granting the forgiveness. Forgiveness, by the way, does not mean that grief ends. It may continue. Grief is another related subject, but I won't really be dealing with that much today. But if we forgive, it can allow a pathway to our forgiveness. So I'm going to tell you two stories. The first story was in 2006, and the other story happened in 1972. By the way, how many people were not alive in 1972? So that's funny. Yeah. So I'll do a little explanation when we come to 1972. Let me ask the other question. How many were not alive in 2006? Well, that's one. Okay. So the first story that I'm going to tell you about happened at the West Nickel Mine School, an Amish school, and it occurred October 1st, 2006. And the story of this incident reverberated around the world. Everybody came to know about this story. And it was in an Amish schoolhouse near Lancaster, Pennsylvania. A man by the name of Charles Carl Roberts, who was 32, backed up his van to the schoolhouse door. He got out, got a rifle, went into the schoolhouse, ordered all the little boys to leave. The teacher and other adults he ordered to leave, and all that were left were 10 little girls. He tied them up, called his wife, told his wife that he was going to do something bad, and he was going to end his life. Two of the little girls, knowing what was going to happen, their names were Marion, who was 6, and Barbara, who was 13, turned to their assaultant and said, "Take us and leave our sisters alone." Carl shot all 10 of the girls. 5 of them died. And 5 survived. That is a tragedy of enormous proportions for the individuals involved. But the story goes beyond that, and it's a story of forgiveness. And almost immediately, one of the elders in the Amish community said, "Don't hate this man. He has a mother, he has a wife, and he has children. Don't hate this man." He stands before a just God. For us, we would say it differently, but we understand that concept. Within hours of that event, a group of Amish elders went to the wife of the killer. She was a little hesitant to answer the door for obvious reasons. She felt that the community would ostracize her and treat her differently. But the elders came and said, "We know it's not your fault. It's not you, and we forgive your husband." The father of the killer was also there. He began to weep. And one of the fathers of the slain children took him in his arms and by all reports held him in his arms for over an hour. Marie, who was the mother, who was the wife of the killer, responded with an open letter, thanking all the Amish for their forgiveness, grace, and mercy. She wrote, and I quote, "Your love of our family has helped to provide the healing we so desperately needed. The gift, forgiveness, involves the word give. The gift you have given me has touched my heart in a way that no words can describe. Your compassion has touched and reached beyond our family, beyond our community, to touch the entire world. The only outsider, the Amish community is a very close community. The only outsider that was allowed at the children's funerals was the wife of the killer. When she buried her husband, 30 Amish men came to the funeral and stood between her and the massive number of reporters and media so that she could bear her grief without all that mess. 30 Amish men built a wall to protect the wife of the killer. The school was demolished within a couple of days by the Amish men. They built a new school that was entirely different looking than the last school, even down to the flooring. And they called that school New Hope. Terry Roberts, the mother of the killer, well, some of the Amish women wanted to console her. So about 9 months later, they came to her house. By the way, Terry thought that she would have to move out of the community because of, you know, the stigma of her being the mother of the killer. Well, these Amish women arrived, and among them was one of the victims of the of this incident. Her name was Rosanna. She couldn't walk, and she was not yet able to talk. But Terry fell in love with this little girl. So the women had tea and so forth, and every Thursday from that day forward, Terry went to the home of Rosanna to provide her mother and dad respite. Let's fast forward 10 years later. These people don't forget. The Amish don't forget. 10 years later, Terry is diagnosed with cancer. She was in the hospital. Fourth stage cancer. So she's in the hospital. It's around Christmas time. She's released, comes home. When she came home, a yellow school bus drove up in front of her driveway. And all the little Amish children got out and sang Christmas carols to Terry. That was 10 years after the incident. They remembered her. They say, or Terry said, and I did some research reading different articles from the New York Times, and recently Terry gave another interview, and she said the Amish women continue to have tea with her. She has a picture that she hides or doesn't put up because she doesn't want to disturb the Amish women. She keeps it away. But when they leave, sometimes she pulls that picture out and she cries because she still loves her son. It's a picture of her son. Some people at the time were very critical of the Amish people for what they did, saying it was performative. You can't give forgiveness that quickly. And they don't understand that within the Amish community, from the time a child is able to comprehend, forgiveness is an integral part of what they are taught. So it becomes natural, not something performative, when they forgive another human being. There was a culture developed of forgiveness, deeply embedded in each Amish person. The other thing that strikes me very clearly about this is that these folks, these Amish folks, decided not to harm. It's a decision they make every time they forgave. They decided not to harm. So forgiveness is a decision. It's a decision not to hate and not to harm. The next story I want to tell you about occurred in June 8, 1972. And with so many hands raised, I realized that you weren't around. It was during the Vietnam War. In that war, 58,000 U.S. troops were killed, and it is estimated that there were 405,000 civilians that died. By the way, West Virginia, which is my home state, had the highest per capita number of deaths of soldiers in the nation. And the young men and women that went into war, 76% of them were of the lower middle class. They had a horrible way to deal with, well, there's no nice way to kill another person, is there? But there was a chemical they used called napalm. Napalm is a derivative of gasoline, and it's a soapy substance that when it hits your skin and it's on fire, you can't brush it off. It just, brushing it off actually makes it worse. We dropped 400,000 tons of napalm on Vietnam, the Vietnamese people. One of those that was hit, her name was Pon Tri Kim Phuc. From now on, I'll just call her Kim. There is an iconic picture of her, and even if you weren't born at that time, you've probably seen it. She's running from the village. She's 9 years old, running from the village with her brother, who's 12, and her two cousins, who were 6 and 7. She runs naked because her clothes had caught on fire and she tore them off. So she's running down the street, the country road, screaming in horror at what had happened to her. That's an iconic picture that we often see when we look at the Vietnam War. Her story is that for a time afterwards, the communist government used her as a propaganda tool. She went around and told of her injuries and how she hated the Americans. But at some point, she got tired of that and realized she was just being used. So she defected to Toronto, Canada. And there she formed a foundation to help children who are injured in war. It's still active. And she was also a spokesman for UNICEF. She said that the pain she felt was not so much the physical, although she had 17 different operations throughout her life. She said the pain was not physical. I could deal with that. It was the emotional. And she had to work through her anger and her grief. In this story, there's another person. His name is John Plummer. John, after hearing Kim's story, believed very strongly he was the bomber, that he was the one that dropped the bomb, the napalm bomb on her. So one time, Kim is at the Vietnam War Memorial in Washington, D.C., and John knows she's there going to speak. During her speech, she said, "If I ever met the bomber, I would forgive him." John was up on the front row. He made sure he got up on the front row. He sent her a message through one of the security officers, I guess. She opened it up and it said, "I am that person." After her speech, he sort of elbowed his way up to Kim, and he only said 6 words. She said 3, and he said 3. And he said, "I'm sorry." And she said, "I forgive you." John had suffered night sweats, nightmares, flashbacks for years. He'd been in treatment and therapy all this time. Had pretty much made a mess of his life. PTSD is a very destructive thing to have. He said that after she forgave him, the nightmares ceased, the cold sweats ceased. Forgiveness can give life back to a person. It can be redemptive. A forgiving heart is a heart and a mind so vast, it can contain the suffering that has been experienced while recognizing the humanity, the Buddha nature of the other person. It's a process for most of us. It's letting go of the desire to want to hurt another being. And it's transforming that rage and that anger that we have into productive ways. And we do that so that the better angels that exist in us all are given voice. Given voice to speak. At the same time, forgiveness is not forgetting the injury done. In order for me to ask you to forgive me, I have to know the dimensions of the injury I have committed. It's not just forgive me. It's what did I do? And if I am to forgive you, it's important that I know what I am forgiving. So it's not like we do a spiritual bypass and just say, you know, I forgive, you're forgiven. It's really deeply understanding that. And if I have done something wrong to you, I have to look at, what did I do? Why did I do that? So it's an internal investigation I have to do. The other thing about forgiveness is it's recognizing that you are bigger than any injury you have sustained. It's recognizing also that the other person is a human being. When I committed that injury to you, I had no thought of you as a human being. And when I am raging in anger because you have done this to me, I don't see you as human. And so forgiveness is all about opening up your heart. And it's a process that may mean that you're forgiving a group of people, another individual, or yourself. And it's slightly different in each case. So what keeps us from forgiving? Why, when it's so beautiful, when we see these instances of people forgiving or being forgiven, why do we not immediately want to do that? Two reasons. One is, if I am the one that has committed the act, I'm ashamed. Shame keeps us from asking forgiveness. And why do I not forgive? Because I am raging. I am angry. So those are the two things we have to work on when we're forgiving. But let's take it down a notch. Just the disputes we have between each other. Not big deals. Just the disputes we have with one another. You've hurt my feelings. I've insulted you. You might not even have meant to do it. But I'm angry. I'm upset. And somehow or another, I show that to you. I don't make the commitment not to hurt you. So I say something back to you, offensive. Well, then you say, he's hurt me. Now I'm going to hurt you back. And it keeps going back and forth, until these little resentments develop into a raging argument. This happens. This happens in a Dharma center. I've seen it. It does. We forget what our core principle of forgiveness is all about. And so these things rage. And actually, there have been Dharma centers who have collapsed based upon someone saying something that was offensive, and it never stopped. And what happens in that kind of rage and anger and resentment, what happens there? I start obsessing on you. I can't think of anything else than how you've hurt me. And it just doesn't stop. And then people start taking sides, and the community collapses under the weight of unforgiven discussion or talk. So this is a core value we have to have in this community. It's really important that we learn to forgive. Let me change gears slightly here for a moment. Last week, Lama Kathy took us from the dissolution of the previous building to the new building. Is a beautiful talk that she gave about that. This building is the result of Rinpoche's desire for us to have this building. There is no question in my mind that without his blessing, this place would never be. And because of people's devotion, boom, here it is. I'm going to say something that might sound a little controversial here, but I'm going to say to you that this building was the easiest part of what Rinpoche wants from us. The building is the easiest thing he wants us to do. There's a bigger thing he wants us to do. His heart's desire is that you and me develop this heart that I'm talking about, this loving, vast, kind heart. And that's harder for us, perhaps, not perhaps, definitely. It's harder than building this building. And I think I know that to be the case because the statue, he thought ahead. The statue that he wants placed here that's coming from Nepal is Vajradhara. That's the statue. I thought, well, why not just a regular, Buddha Shakyamuni? I mean, that would be cool. But Vajradhara, he planned that Vajradhara would sit here. Now, who is Vajradhara? He's the primordial Buddha. And through his instructions that were passed down from teacher to student, we learn how to develop this vast and open heart. You may call it the Mahamudra instructions. So he has this plan for us. He really does. He has this plan for us that we become this community of love, of vast love and kindness. That's what he saw before he died. That's the second part that we have to accomplish. When we look outside this building, and I think this is really cool that we have this here. You won't see this in any Tibetan shrine room, would you, Lama Man? You would not see that. And so when I first came in, I'd tell you the truth, I didn't particularly like it. What? Why there? And I think there's a reason it's there. If we want to have a loving and compassionate heart, we have to see out. And if we're going to have any effect on the community, they have to be able to see in. So that window's there for a reason, to remind us that as a loving community, we have to see the suffering in the world. And if we want to have any effect on people, they got to see us as a community of love, a community of compassion. There is every reason for us to be here and needed. Last year, 204 homicides were committed in this area. 204. The victims ranged in ages from 17 months to 89 years old. Every one of them had a mother, a father. Many had children, 21 of them were children. So in this community right now, a lot of rage, a lot of grief, a lot of sadness. I have no idea how we address that out there, but we begin by ourselves, me and you, developing this loving, kind, forgiving heart so that, like the Amish, in a different way, but But like the Amish, people can look at us as examples of what love and compassion, reconciliation and love might look like. So my prayer, and Rinpoche's heart's desire, is that we do that as a group. And that's the hard work that you and I have ahead of us. I'm looking to see how much time I have. Still a little time. So, what we're going to do right now is called Tonglin. Many of you know what that's all about. And for you that don't, I'll give you very simple instructions. The instructions are, we put our attention on our breath. First of all, more important than anything else, relax. Just relax. You can assume a meditation posture, but be relaxed. We're going to put our attention on our breath. And on the in-breath, we take in suffering in the form of dark smoke, allow it go into our heart center. Rinpoche said when that comes into your heart center, think of this as hitting an iron that's very hot and it just sizzles and burns away. So you bring in the suffering, let it dissipate, and using the image of a hot iron that burns away any of the suffering, and that we breathe out in the form of bright light, healing and help to those that are suffering. So it's breathing in and breathing out, breathing in the suffering and breathing out our love, compassion, and healing. So the object of our first The first person we want to put up in front of our mind's eye is Ronnie Lee Carroll. Let's think of him, this confused adolescent little boy. Uneducated, underemployed, having addictions. Actually was one of our neighbors who in his lifetime endured a great deal of trauma. Let's see him in front of us. And in the form of dark smoke, breathe in his suffering. And breathe out whatever Ronnie needs to be healed, healthy, and whole. A gentle breath. We don't have to exaggerate. Now let the object of our attention be all the mothers and fathers and children of the victims of homicides in this city. Think of all their grief, their sadness. Breathe it in the form of dark smoke and breathe out your love, concern, and compassion. And if it becomes difficult, it's okay. Just have your intention be, if I could help them, I would. If I could take on their suffering, I would. That's good too. We know that all beings suffer. So with our big mind, our loving mind, our joyful mind, place in front of you as best you can, in your mind's eye, all suffering beings. And say to yourself, if I could take on their suffering, I would. And I would give them all my love and compassion. So from now on, when we look out this window, may we look out with the eyes of compassion. And when people look in, may they see us practicing so that this vast and beautiful heart that exists within us is revealed. May unbearable compassion spontaneously arise from the realization of this awakened mind and heart. That doesn't ring very well. There we go. So we have a few minutes, and we only have one microphone. We can put it up, right? Oh, you got another microphone. There. Anybody that wants, has any comments, questions, thoughts, you're welcome to do that. Good morning, Marcus.
Good morning. This is a big room. It's a long trip. Thank you, Lama Tom. That teaching was very touching, very affecting, and I thank you very much for it. So as I was sitting there thinking about it, and I thought back to when Ronnie Lee Carroll burned down our center and the interfaith ceremony we had in the parking lot, and we all expressed forgiveness, and I kind of think that was an example of a rare injustice that was done to me in my community, and was very easy for me to forgive. But I think about the Ukrainians. I'm not Ukrainian. I'm not Syrian, I'm not Yemeni, Afghani, Iraqi, so many different places where things have been done. I'm cis, straight, white, male. I'm very protected from a lot of that. The anger I always feel has this element of when I see powerful people oppressing a community that doesn't have the advantages, can you give any advice about how to develop forgiveness when you're looking at a powerful world leader leading an invasion, a racist power structure that causes so much injustice and things like that? Because I think that's the anger I really tend to see in myself a lot.
We know one thing, and the one thing we know is that hate of anyone is not going to be helpful. We know that. We know that our love, to be true love, has to be unbiased. We know that. So why is it that knowing that we still have these feelings? I think one of the reasons is because we feel this self-righteousness, this self-righteous rage. Like, I don't know. I think we have to start with our own hearts and work on that and recognize Putin is no different than you or me, and he suffers. And as a result of his suffering, he's causing everybody else to suffer. That is not to say the man should not be stopped, mm-hmm. but it does mean we can't hate him. Mm-hmm. It does not, at this point, require us not to defend ourselves against people who hate, nor does it mean we simply sit and let ourselves be hurt. One of the parts I said about forgiveness is we have to understand the true dimensions of the harm done before we can either forgive or be forgiven. Mm-hmm. So we do have to know that. But I go back to the one thing we have to do, and that is make a decision, and that's hard, mm-hmm. make a decision not to hate. Mm-hmm. But I'd like to, what would you say about this?
No, I'm really like the terms you're putting it into. Decision. You've got to, it's practice, right? You've got to keep working with it. I like that. And I, as you were just now talking, I remembered the story I heard about KTD on 9/11, that there was a teaching going on during 9/11 at KTD in New York, and that whoever was teaching at the time found out about the events and actually said, you know, we have to forgive the mm-hmm. the terrorists who flew the planes. And I know that was really difficult for a lot of people, because when that emotion mm-hmm. is there, it's yes. hard to make that decision. It's difficult yeah. to make that decision, but I like the way you're phrasing it. With
the other thing I would say is this is forgiveness 101. There is another way to deal with the anger when it arises within you. It's an advanced meditative technique, which is look at the perceiver who's being angry. Mm. Mm-hmm. Who is it? Where is it? What color is it? What shape, size it is. That's an advanced technique that I mm-hmm. Rinpoche has taught on, mm-hmm. but not a subject that I bring up here much. Mm-hmm. But privately, when those things do arise, it's a good practice to look internally. Mm-hmm. Who is it? Who is this perceiver that's getting upset?
Mm-hmm. And that decision and that practice, all of that's internal, and that's all we can actually
yeah.
effect, honestly.
Yeah.
And that's
yeah.
Yeah, that's yeah. that's very good advice. Thank you, Lama Tom.
Yeah. Other thoughts? So I want to do one last thing very quickly. And Lama Adam Were you here? You left right after the building burnt down, didn't you?
6 months after.
6 months after. So he's like, come back to this community. He's been working, doing a lot of things around here. One of the things he is he takes care of the library. And for what it's worth, I want to welcome you here. And the results of your efforts are already very clear to everybody here. So we thank you. And what I wanted to do is I wanted to give him a present.
And you want to open it up?
Thank you.
The picture is on.
That was hanging in the old library in our old building. I think Michael Brennan rescued it from the fire. It's got a lot of smoke stain on it, but it's sort of still sort of beautiful. And if you wouldn't mind putting that in the library, that would be cool.
That's awesome. Thank you.
So let's dedicate the merit of our being here together today. So I'll say it once in Tibetan, just so you know I can. Only joking. Well, I'm not a good Tibetan reader, but I'll do the best. And then we'll say it twice in English. I'll say it in Tibetan once. Sanam dei tamshe jikpani, tobne nepe dronam pancheni, kagyana chi palap tupayi, sipe sole drowa. By this merit, may all attain omniscience. May it defeat the enemy wrongdoing. From the stormy waves of birth, old age, sickness, and death, from the ocean of samsara, may I free all beings. By this merit, may all attain omniscience. May it defeat the enemy wrongdoing. From the stormy waves of birth, old age, sickness, and death, from the ocean of samsara, may I free all beings. Thank you very much.
Thank you for joining us for this week's Dharma Talk. We hope you enjoyed the podcast. If you did, please subscribe, rate, and review it on iTunes. To learn more about the Columbus Karma Teksum Choling or to donate to support our Dharma Talk series, please visit our website at columbusktc.org. The opening and closing music for the podcast is Tibetan Flute Song by Tamding Arts at tamdingarts.com. Please join us again next week for another Dharma Talk.